Day, everybody. Good morning. This is Bio 231. And I got to put this mic on without pushing the pause button. Okay. So today is December 6th. This is the last lecture. We're going to finish up reproductive system today. And one of the lectures last week didn't come out for some reason. I forget which one it was, but just very short. You get about 30 seconds of the lecture instead of the whole hour and a half. That's the way it goes. So if you really want to listen to that lecture, just go to the previous semester, right? So just click back and go listen to a previous semester or a number of them. All right, so who's got a question about reproductive system? Nobody's got a question. What's the primary reproductive structure in the male? Testes. What's the primary reproductive structure in the female? Ovary. Okay. What's the function of the testes? It produces sperm. I agree with that. And a sperm is a gamete. I think we maybe went over that last time. But what else does the testes do? It produces sperm, but it also produces and secretes testosterone hormones. That's right. That's the primary male sex steroid. And that produces secondary sex characteristics. And you know what? I don't remember talking about some secondary sex characteristics in males, so probably we should talk about that. And it's dependent on testosterone. So I guess the best way to think of this is to contrast the secondary sex characteristics in the male with that of the female. So typically, in the male, compared to the female, they're going to have more and coarser hair all over their body. The larynx is going to be bigger, which means their voices, males' voices, are going to be a little bit deeper in tone. And they're going to have a little bit more muscle mass because there are testosterone receptors in muscles, and they're going to have a little bit bigger bone mass as well. Okay? And onset of puberty is delayed compared to females a little bit. So that's why males have a tendency to be a little bit taller compared to females, at least within a family. So those are all secondary sex characteristics. And the female, you said that the primary reproductive structure was the ovary. So what does the ovary produce? Eggs. And what else? And two hormones. Instead of just one, there are two. There's estrogen and progesterone. Right. Okay, and the estrogen produces secondary sex characteristics of the female, which is what? A little bit lower body mass, breasts, less hair, less coarse hair, less bone density, which means females are a little bit higher risk for osteoporosis than males typically. Okay, so let's look at how hormones interact with the female reproductive structures. All right, so on the left-hand side screen, we see a picture of an ovary. And we said last time that the female is born with all the primary oocytes that she will ever have in her lifetime, right, which is what? Tens of thousands. Probably when you're born, 250,000. I think by the time you reach the puberty or maturity, it's about 50,000 that remain. Okay, and then once a woman enters reproductive years, one of these primary follicles will develop, as we see in this ovary right here, right, once a month, right, and then we see a mature ovary with an oocyte on the inside. We have a bunch of thecal cells that surround what we call the follicle, and then there is a lot of fluid also in this mature follicle, and then right at mid-cycle, this secondary oocyte is going to be ovulated or expelled from the ovary, and then it's going to make its way throughout the body. So how's it going to go? How's this secondary oocyte going to wander around inside the female body? Does it have a cilia? Does it have a flagellum? No, it doesn't. So how does it move around? Okay, it waits for a sperm to give it a little taxi ride someplace. Not really, because the flagella from the sperm doesn't really attach to the egg. Okay, but that would be interesting if that were to happen. Okay, that would be a little nice little symbiosis taking place. But this egg gets trapped by the fimbria. Remember, the fimbria is that lacy end of the fallopian tube or the salpinx, and the fimbriated edge of the fallopian tube is sweeping over the ovary all the time. And then the epithelium within the fallopian tube and the fimbrias, what kind of epithelium? It's a functional kind. Okay, it's not transitional. Transitional we see in the bladder so that it can stretch and contract. All right, but it is ciliated. Right, so the epithelium of the fimbria is ciliated, and the cilia are sweeping, right, generating a flow from the pelvic cavity down toward the uterus. And so this oocyte right here just gets trapped in that flow, and then it moves down the fallopian tube. Right, and there's where if fertilization is going to take place, where it usually takes place within the fallopian tube, and then that fertilized egg. What's the name of a fertilized egg? It's a zygote, yeah, makes its way to the uterus, again, due to that flow that's developed by the cilia, and it implants into the uterus. So that's the function of the fallopian tube and the uterus. All right, so ovulation happens right at mid-cycle. So let's take a look at the slide on the right, and the top part of this slide right here shows the ovarian cycle, and then the little diagram on the bottom of the slide shows the uterine cycle. So there are two cycles, and of course they're controlled and coordinated. All right, and they have some different names. All right, so day one, let's start maybe with the uterine cycle. Right at day one is when menses starts, right? And so that's the period of a little hemorrhage where the endometrium is sloughed from the uterus, so that's day one, and that can last for about 5 days. All right, so in terms of the ovary, right, when the menstrual cycle starts, right, we call this the follicular phase. So a primary follicle is going to mature into a mature follicle, and that's going to take what? About 2 weeks for that to happen. All right, right at mid-cycle, ovulation takes place, and the egg is expelled from the ovary. But that follicle doesn't just disappear at this point in time. It becomes a very important endocrine gland that we call the corpus luteum. And then the corpus luteum, if implantation does not take place, if fertilization and implantation doesn't take place, the corpus luteum starts to degenerate in about a week and a half. Right, and it becomes the corpus albicans right here, which is just a white body that doesn't secrete much in any kinds of hormones. All right, so let's take a look at some hormones. So I want to look at this slide right here. Here are a couple hormones coming from the anterior pituitary gland. One is called luteinizing hormone, and the other is called follicle-stimulating hormone. And we can see that during the first part of the ovarian cycle, and also the first part of the uterine cycle right here, follicle-stimulating hormone is increasing. All right, so I don't want to look at the relative levels. I just want to look at between LH and FSH. I just want to look at the relative levels of, for instance, follicle-stimulating hormone. So if we look on the ovary over here, what is a follicle? These follicles have primary oocytes in them, okay? And then these start to develop, or at least maybe three or four will start to develop under the influence of follicle-stimulating hormone from what gland? You should know this gland right here. Yeah, pituitary. As a matter of fact, the pituitary's got two parts, so you should probably know which part even. This is the anterior pituitary. So FSH from the anterior pituitary is going to drive a handful of these follicles to maturity, but only one usually reaches maturity, which is what we call a mature oocyte or a Graafian follicle right here. The others will just regress. Okay, and then on day 14, something special happens. They're actually maybe around day 11, 12, 13. Then there's another hormone from the anterior pituitary that starts to increase, and that's called luteinizing hormone. And then right at day 14, you see this big spike in luteinizing hormone, and what that does, if we look on the slide on the left over here, this causes ovulation, which is the expulsion of that secondary oocyte from the follicle into the pelvic cavity. And then immediately, LH starts to decline, FSH starts to decline, all right, and then we're going to have to look at some other things that are happening. All right, so what I want you to understand is going from these follicles, these immature follicles, to a mature follicle, there's one hormone that's primarily responsible for that, and that is follicle-stimulating hormone. All right, so that's not too hard to realize. So these follicle-stimulating hormones stimulates what? Follicles to develop, right, in the ovary. And then, right at day 14, there's this big spike in LH, and I want you to tell me what that spike in LH causes. That causes ovulation, okay? That causes ovulation. So FSH causes a follicles to grow. LH causes ovulation. Okay, so let's go back to this slide right here. All right, so the ovarian cycle has got two main phases to it. The first phase, starting at day one, we call the follicular phase because what's developing? Follicles are developing during that time. All right, and then only one will reach maturity. And then on day 14, ovulation takes place. And then the follicle becomes a different kind of gland altogether, becomes the corpus luteum. So from day 14 to day number one, that's what we call the luteal phase. All right, now what organ are we talking about? What organ has a follicular phase and a luteal phase? What organ is that? Over here, we're talking about, on the left-hand side, the ovary, right? So day 1 to 14, that's the follicular phase, shown by, right, the top and the right-hand side of the ovary right here. And then the luteal phase we see on the bottom left-hand side of the ovary right here, which shows that corpus luteum. Okay, so that is the... That's the ovarian cycle. Okay, so what hormones are in control of the ovarian cycle? What causes or what really controls the follicular phase? All right, notice I'm sweeping over events during the follicular phase of the ovarian cycle. What hormone is driving, if you're going to pick one hormone, right? And you know what? Let's list the hormones that you should be thinking of. There is FSH, follicle-stimulating hormone. There's LH, which is luteinizing hormone. And then there are some steroids, estrogen and progesterone. All right, so of those four hormones, which one is in control of the follicular phase within the ovary? FSH, that's right, follicle-stimulating hormone. All right, and then which one is in control, all right, right here on day 14 that causes ovulation? That is LH. That's right. Okay. All right. So you're probably wondering about two other hormones, right? And that is estrogen and progesterone. All right. So what's controlling this what's controlling events within the ovary are those anterior pituitary hormones. But the follicles in the corpus luteum, as they start to grow, are going to be secreting some hormones. All right, now what did we say the function of an ovary was? Two things. Produce an oocyte, but also what? Some hormones. It secretes estrogen and progesterone, right? So estrogen primarily comes from follicles, right? And as these follicles develop and get bigger, guess what happens to estrogen secretion? It goes up, okay? And then right at ovulation, estrogen secretion has a tendency to drop. And then the corpus luteum, right, is just not a degenerate part of the follicle right here. It grows and develops into another very important endocrine gland that we call the corpus luteum. And the corpus luteum secretes progesterone. All right, so developing follicles primarily secrete estrogen, and the corpus luteum secretes, if you're just going to pick one, is going to secrete progesterone. All right, so let me find A picture of that. Ooh, 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 ooh. Don't go away, come back over here. Okay, so I want to show you this diagram. Okay, so now I don't have a picture of the ovarian cycle. I have a picture of just the uterine cycle right here. Okay, but let's just kind of refresh our memory. What did we call the first part, right, of the ovarian cycle from day 1 to day 14? What phase? That was the follicular phase of the ovarian cycle. Okay, and so what we see down here is some names of the phases of the uterine cycle, and then we see some hormones that are being secreted by the ovary. All right, and so as follicles develop, liquid hormone is increasing in concentration. Estrogen is increasing because if we look on the left-hand side, these follicles are growing and secreting estrogen. And if we go back to the right-hand side, we can see estrogen increasing as well. All right, and what about progesterone during the first half of the cycle? All right, it's very, very low. It's really non-existent. All right, and when does it start to build up? After day 14. What happens at day 14 in the ovarian cycle? That's ovulation. What hormone was primarily responsible for causing ovulation? That was LH, right? So LH causes this event over here if we look on the left-hand side. And we get expulsion of the egg. The follicle now becomes the corpus luteum. The corpus luteum, what happens to estrogen? It decreases, right? So the job of the corpus luteum is not really to secrete a lot of estrogen anymore. It's to secrete progesterone, right? So progesterone levels increase. All right, the ovary still does secrete a little bit of estrogen, but pretty much the job of estrogen is done at that point in time. All right, so what is happening right here? We're going to have to look at one more slide. Maybe I can bring it up on this picture over here. Okay, so on the left-hand side, we see kind of like a histological section of the endometrium of the uterus. All right, what are the three layers of the uterus? Endometrium, myometrium, the perimetrium, right? So the endometrium is what? The deepest, the innermost lining of the uterus. All right, so day one is when the endometrium is lost from the body due to that mild hemorrhage, right? And then what happens to the endometrium once again? It starts to grow back. Okay, and if you're going to pick one hormone from the ovary, so the ovary is in control of the endometrium. And what are the two hormones coming from the ovary? They are estrogen and progesterone. So what hormone is increasing during the first phase? Okay, estrogen, right? So estrogen is causing the endometrium to grow. So when you start with one cell, and you end up with two cells, and then four, and then 16, right, and then 32. We call that proliferation. Proliferation is when the cells within a certain organ multiply by mitosis, right? And that's kind of an exponential function. First there's two, and then those split into two, so then you got four, and then those split into two, you got eight, right? So very quickly, you have many, many thousands and thousands of more cells. So that's proliferation. All right, but not just the uterus is undergoing proliferation, but also breast tissue is sensitive to estrogen, and there are cells within the breast that also proliferate during the menstrual cycle. Okay, and then right at day 14, right, we can see that the endometrial glands right here are mature enough. The endometrium is highly vascularized, and it is almost ready for implantation to take place. So before day 14, the endometrium is not ready for implantation. And after day 14, right, under the influence of increasing progesterone, we see that the endometrium is still growing and proliferating, and estrogen helps maintain that process as well. But if I was going to pick one hormone, I would say progesterone. All right, so like right at day 20 over here, the uterus is in perfect shape for implantation. The endometrial glands are mature, and the endometrium is highly vascularized. It's ready for implantation. And these glands secrete, we're not exactly sure what the interaction is yet. Maybe somebody knows, but I don't know. But it helps implantation. And so the first part, actually the middle part of the uterine cycle is the proliferative phase that happens after the menstrual phase. And then the whole last part of the cycle is what we call the secretory phase, because these glands are secreting something into the lumen of the uterus that aids in implantation. All right, and like I said, we're not quite sure exactly what the interaction is between the secretion and that embryo that's going to implant. Okay, so what should you know for the test? Well, in terms of the uterine cycle, what do we call day 1 through day 5? That's the menstrual phase. Okay, and then after the menstrual phase, what's happening to the uterus? And as a matter of fact, what layer of the uterus are we most concerned with? The endometrium. It's starting to grow, right? It's getting thicker. We call that proliferation. Blood vessels are starting to grow within the endometrium. Glands are starting to develop, right? And what hormone is being secreted from the ovary that causes the proliferative phase? There's only one, and that is estrogen. That's right. So that's estrogen causing proliferation right here, right? Causing the development of the blood vessels and of these glands right here, as well as the number of cells that make up the endometrium. All right, and then after ovulation, all right, the glands start to secrete a product. The endometrium still continues to grow because there still is some estrogen being produced, but there is another hormone that's being produced that's going to maintain the endometrium. And it's coming from the ovary again. But what happens at ovulation? What happens to that mature follicle? It disappears. What does it become? It becomes the corpus luteum. It becomes the corpus luteum, and the corpus luteum then starts to secrete a lot of progesterone, puts the final finishing touches on the endometrium. That's when it reaches its maximum size, maximum secretion, maximum blood vessels as a result of progesterone. And if implantation does not take place, right, then, I got to go back. If implantation does not take place, If implantation does not take place, let's look at that ovary once again. Okay. So if implantation does not take place, here is a nice mature corpus luteum. If implantation does not take place, it starts to degenerate into the corpus albicans. Just kind of a little dense white body of connective tissue right here. And the corpus albicans, right, we can see stops secreting progesterone. And when progesterone starts to decline, and estrogen is declining here as well, all right, guess what happens to the endometrium of the uterus? Okay, it starts to degenerate. So that's another functional scenario that I want you to be aware of. What's causing the degeneration, right, of the endometrium on the last part of the cycle? It is due to decreasing levels of progesterone and estrogen, but primarily progesterone, right, is causing the degeneration of the endometrium right here. All right. Now, that doesn't always happen. When is the endometrium maintained? For a long time. Yeah, for instance, if there is implantation, if there is a pregnancy, okay, then there's something special that happens. Okay, The develop, so here's where the placenta is going to develop. The placenta is part tissue from the embryo and part from the endometrium right here. They join together to form an organ called the placenta. As it's forming, right, the placenta is going to secrete a hormone. And that hormone goes back to the ovary right here. Right, that hormone from the placenta, as it's developing, goes back to the corpus luteum and tells the corpus luteum not to regress, right, to stay functional. And what's the job of the corpus luteum right here? What is it secreting primarily? We're going to look over here on the right-hand slide. It is primarily secreting progesterone. All right, so progesterones don't decrease. They're going to stay at high levels, because this corpus luteum isn't regressing, and that's going to maintain the endometrium until the placenta takes over. And I guess I want you to know the name of the hormone that the placenta secretes to maintain the corpus luteum so that progesterone remains at a high level during the initial phases of gestation. And I'll write it on the board if I got a marker. All right, the name of that hormone that's coming from the placenta is called H, and H stands for human, and capital C, and then capital G. So that stands for human chorionic. How do you spell chorion? Ooh, is it CH? I forgot. Yeah, chorionic gonadotropin. Human chorionic gonadotropin. Okay, so where does human chorionic gonadotropin come from? It comes from a viable placenta. And human chorionic gonadotropin, as the placenta grows and develops, guess what? It increases and gets higher and higher and higher. And when somebody takes a pregnancy test, like a urine pregnancy test, that's the hormone that the pregnancy test is monitoring. Okay? Because where does it come from? Does human chorionic gonadotropin come from an ovary? Nope. Does it come from the uterus? Nope. It comes from the placenta. But what kind of placenta? A viable placenta, which means what? That there is a pregnancy. There's a viable pregnancy there. And if these levels of human chorionic gonadotropin ever start to decrease, what does that mean? That means that this placenta is dying or dead, which means then that the pregnancy is terminated as a result, okay, for whatever reason. Okay. So, let me ask you some questions. Let's go and look at the ovarian cycle right here. Okay? And what gland is controlling the ovarian cycle? The pituitary gland, right? Because the pituitary gland is going to be secreting what? Hormones, namely LH and FSH. Which one is the most important at the beginning part? The follicular phase of the ovarian cycle. FSH. That's right. FSH is going to cause a handful of these follicles to mature. Most are going to regress. One, sometimes maybe two, reach maturity for ovulation. All right. And then what hormone from the pituitary causes ovulation? That is LH. This big spike in LH right here causes ovulation. All right, so then we're no longer in the follicular phase of the ovarian cycle. After ovulation, we call that the luteal phase, because no longer do you have a follicle inside the ovary, you have the corpus luteum, right? And the corpus luteum secretes a little bit of estrogen, but estrogen starts to go down. What hormone really takes off? Or what hormone does the corpus luteum really secrete in high concentration? This is progesterone. That's right. Okay. And If we look at the uterine cycle as opposed to the ovarian cycle, where was that? Okay, so here's the uterine cycle. Now, what hormones are in control of the uterine cycle? Are they from the anterior pituitary? What are the hormones from the anterior pituitary? FSH and LH. That's right. But what hormones are controlling the uterus right here? Estrogen and progesterone. And where are they coming from? From the ovary. Estrogen primarily from the follicle, and progesterone from the corpus luteum. That's right. Okay, so menstrual flow. Okay, what's controlling menstrual flow? What's happening? What kind of hormones are changing when menses starts? Estrogen and progesterone. What's happening to estrogen and progesterone? They are both. Where's my marker? Here it is. Oop, where is it? Here. Okay, so on day one, menstrual flow is produced by decreasing levels of both progesterone and estrogen. That's what's causing the loss of the endometrium, right? Okay, and then the endometrium starts to slowly grow back due to estrogen levels that are increasing, because what's growing inside the ovary? What's developing inside the ovary? The follicles are developing, and as they get bigger and bigger, they secrete more and more estrogens. Estrogen goes to the uterus and causes it to proliferate, right? So this middle phase of the uterine cycle is the proliferative phase, right? And then here on day 14 is ovulation. The follicle disappears. What is it replaced with? Does it just disappear, or is something important kind of born? Something important forms, and that is the corpus luteum, right? So the ovary enters the luteal phase, and the corpus luteum starts to secrete what? Progesterone. Still secretes some estrogen, but mostly progesterone, and that puts the final touches on the endometrium. It proliferates, the glands develop, the blood vessels develop, and it's ready for implantation. Okay, but if implantation does not occur, what happens to the corpus luteum? After about 7 days, it's going to start to regress, right? If implantation does not take place, estrogen and progesterone decrease. That signals another menses. But if implantation does take place, what happens? Then the placenta develops, and the placenta is going to send a signal to the ovary, which is what? It's going to send a signal to the ovary, and that signal is human chorionic gonadotropin. And human chorionic gonadotropin is going to tell that corpus luteum, don't regress. Stay active. And what's the job of the corpus luteum? To secrete progesterone, so progesterone levels stay high, the endometrium is maintained, and the implantation or the pregnancy is maintained as a result, until the placenta is big enough to secrete enough estrogen and progesterone by itself to maintain the endometrium. All right, so the corpus luteum eventually, it doesn't last the whole gestational period, but it lasts long enough until the placenta is developed enough to maintain the endometrium right here. All right, so those are five hormones that I want you to know. And I want you to know where they're coming from and what their effect on the body is, right? And how it affects the menstrual phase, the proliferative phase, the secretory phase of the uterine cycle, and what are the phases of the ovarian cycle? You've got the follicular phase and the luteal phase. The first part is when the follicles are developing. The second part is when the corpus luteum is doing its job. So you got the follicular phase and the luteal phase. Okay, so that's the interaction of those hormones. So guess what? That doesn't sound like a lot of anatomy. Okay, but You do have some questions on the final regarding these five hormones, where they're coming from and what they're controlling. So, I don't know. Ask me some questions. Have you got an idea where the hormones are coming from and what they're signaling? So you should know where the hormones are coming from, what their target tissue is, and which one is doing what during different phases of the ovarian cycle and the uterine cycle. Yeah. Luteal phase. Yeah. Oh, that's a nice marker. Luteal. L-U-T-E-A-L. As opposed to follicular. Luteal phase happens after ovulation. FSH. Yeah, it's a hormone. It's a gonadotropin. Right, so you're talking about FSH and LH. Both of these are gonadotropins. Okay, which means that they have an effect on a gonad, which is the primary reproductive structure. What's a gonad in a male? Testes. Gonad in a female is? Ovary, so these are going to have an effect on the ovary. They're gonna like feed the ovary or make it do something. So that's what tropin means right here. It's going to help develop the ovary. These are gonadotropins, and in the male, right, they'll help develop the testes and spermatogenesis. But in the female, it's going to be developing of a follicle. That's what FSH does, right? So these come from the anterior pituitary. Gonadotropins from anterior pituitary. And since they're a hormone, okay, the anterior pituitary releases it. How do they get to the gonad, the ovary? How do they get there? They're pretty far away. Pituitary is way up in the brain, right? The ovary is way down in pelvic cavity. And you're right, they travel by the blood. That's the nature of a hormone. They're distributed all over the body by the blood. Anterior pituitary releases them, wherever it is. Anterior pituitary releases them into interstitial fluid, and they're picked up by a special kind of blood vessel. What kind of blood vessel can pick up these hormones right here? Is it an artery? Is it a vein? An arteriole? A venule? Or what? A capillary. Because why? Because exchange takes place in a capillary. Capillaries are thin enough. The only blood vessel is thin enough to allow for exchange. All right, so then they're picked up in the anterior pituitary. Blood then travels to the ovary, and they can leave the blood vessels that are inside the ovary. Why can they leave blood vessels in the ovary? What kind of blood vessels are in an ovary? There are more capillaries there. Right, so those hormones can diffuse out, and the cells, the follicular cells, have a receptor for these hormones, and then they'll respond to the levels of these gonadotropins. Okay, so how are they going to respond? FSH is going to cause the maturation of a handful of follicles. Right, somewhere along the line, most of them are going to regress and be resorbed, and usually one reaches maturity, so that at day 14, right, this big spike in LH right here can cause ovulation. All right, so FSH and LH both come from the anterior pituitary. They're both called gonadotropins. All right, but don't forget that those follicles have a job too. What's the job of a follicle? Where do you find a follicle? In the ovary. So what's the job of a follicle? Okay, so it's helping an egg mature, but it's also going to control another organ. It's going to help control an organ other than the ovary. And what is that organ? And that is the uterus, and in particular the endometrium, and in particular the functional layer of the endometrium. Right? So estrogen causes the proliferative phase. Right? And then progesterone is going to cause the secretory phase. And progesterone then, if it remains high, is going to maintain the endometrium. Right? When do progesterone levels stay high? If implantation takes place, because the corpus luteum doesn't regress. What hormone prevents regression of the corpus luteum into the corpus albicans if implantation takes place? HCG. And where does that come from? A viable placenta, right? As the placenta is growing, it's going to be secreting more and more human chorionic gonadotropin. That's going to maintain the endometrium. But if there is no HCG being produced because there's no placenta, what happens to the corpus luteum? It starts to regress, it starts to die, and then what happens to progesterone and estrogen levels? They start to decrease, and as they decrease, that affects the endometrium that causes what? Menses, right? That causes the menstrual phase of the uterine cycle. So these things are all connected up together. Okay, so here is progesterone right here. That's a steroid. Estrogen is a steroid. Testosterone is a steroid. And progesterone is a short form for a name of this hormone. It actually has a much longer name. What do you call that period of time when an embryo is developing into a fetus in utero? That's called gestation, right? When there is an embryo growing inside of a uterus, getting bigger, that's gestation. So progesterone, the real name for progesterone is called progestational hormone, right? So a hormone that promotes what? Gestation. How does it promote gestation? Because it maintains the endometrium. It prevents the endometrium from being sloughed off. It prevents the uterus from going into a menstrual phase. That's number one. Right, so it maintains the glands and the vasculature that's necessary, right, to maintain the placenta. Right, so it has a powerful effect on the endometrium, maintaining it. But it also has an important effect on the myometrium. Progesterone affects the myometrium. So during gestation, do you think that the myometrium should be just chronically contracted, holding the fetus, or should it be highly irritable? Should it be contracting and then relaxing? Contracting and relaxing, or just kind of contracting in a steady fashion? Contraction in a steady fashion, that's right. So progesterone is necessary to maintain pregnancy, not only because of its effect on the endometrium, but it keeps the myometrium nice and quiet. Because if the myometrium, for whatever reason, becomes very irritable and starts to contract, guess what happens then? Well, that's when labor starts, right? And then that would be the end of that pregnancy. So progesterone maintains gestation both because of its effect on the endometrium as well as the myometrium, which we don't see on this slide right here. So that's how important progestational hormone is. What's another name for progestational hormone? That's progesterone. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to let you think of some questions. And I think that I'm done. Oh, any of those that are in the study guide, any of those are really, really good. And you know what? I can't remember exactly which ones are in there, but I could take a guess, like a sagittal view, right? Here we have a coronal sagittal view of the male and female, coronal view of male and female. And I would guess I probably even have these in there as well. Figure 24.19, ABCD. Right, because that shows the correlation of the various structures of the ovary, the uterus, and anterior pituitary hormones and ovarian hormones. It doesn't show human chorionic gonadotropin, but I would hope that you could picture that one, where that takes place. Mm-hmm. Okay, so five hormones you got to know for the final. Yeah. I would say estrogen and progesterone has more of an effect on breast tissue. Okay, so FSH only indirectly, because as FSH levels increase, then the follicle gets bigger and bigger. A follicle grows and secretes more and more estrogen. Okay, so it's that estrogen that's really causing proliferation of glandular tissue in the breast. In particular, glandular tissue.
So five hormones are FSH?
FSH? Yeah. Now, FSH and LH have a common name. They're grouped together because they both come from the anterior pituitary. What's the common name for LH and FSH? Yeah, gonadotropins. They're gonadotropins because they have an effect on the gonads, in this particular case, the ovaries. And we have estrogen and progesterone. Where are they coming from? What organ are they coming from? The ovary. And then in particular, what part of the ovary is estrogen coming from? If you're just going to pick one, you would say a developing follicle for estrogen. And for progesterone, where is it coming from? The corpus luteum. Corpus luteum secretes a little bit of estrogen. All right, but if I was going to pick one, say progesterone. Okay, then those levels of estrogen and progesterone will cause even more development of the breast, right? And that will continue if implantation takes place. Okay, you know, we talked about cancer a little bit, being a sexually transmitted disease. In particular, what part of the female reproductive tract is sensitive to human papillomavirus, is the cervix in particular, and can cause dysplastic changes of the cervix, which can then turn into cancer. Okay, but what's another cancer of the female reproductive system that's very prevalent, more so than cervical cancer, and that is? Yeah, that's breast cancer. Okay, I think that's what you all said. And why is that? You should have like an understanding of why that's happening now. Because what happens every month? Because of increasing levels of estrogen and progesterone, what happens to breast tissue? It starts to proliferate, just like the endometrium, right? And so there are cells that are told to start speeding up their metabolism, start growing, and then at the end of the menstrual cycle, what happens? Then they regress. And then what happens in a couple weeks? Again, the light switch is turned on and they're told to grow, right? And then after a couple weeks, they regress. And then what happens in a couple weeks after that? Then they're stimulated into growing again, right? And so it's kind of a delicate control system. Here you have some tissue that's told to grow and regress. So it's very easy for that kind of tissue to what? Start growing and never stop growing. Okay, and that's what, and then even to metastasize. So that's what breast cancer is. So there are some breast cancers that are highly sensitive to estrogen because they're loaded with estrogen receptors. Right, those can be treated relatively easily by antagonizing those receptors, estrogen receptors. Right, but so don't forget, proliferation is when what happens to a tissue? It starts to grow. Yeah, it starts to grow. Okay, so I'm not surprised that breast tissue can, especially glandular tissue, can form cancers. And what about the endometrium? Okay, endometrium. What happens to the endometrium every month? We see over here. It grows and then regresses, right? And when it's regressing, then it's supposedly sloughed off out of the body, right, with a little menstrual flow. But every once in a while, some of these endometrial cells, as they're breaking away from the uterus, can find their way where? Let me go back to this picture right here. All right. So some of the endometrium can find its way back through a fallopian tube, right? And maybe find some blood vessels or capillaries on the outside of the fallopian tube or outside of the ovary or in mesenteries that are in the pelvic cavity or even abdominal cavity. And then, right, as estrogen increases, what happens to those endometrial cells that have found their way into the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity? They start to grow and proliferate, okay, and cause an irritation. It's not cancer, right, because they can't leave the cavity and go into an organ like bone or liver or brain or something like that. But there they can live for many years and proliferate once a month, causing an irritation, and in some people it's a really severe irritation, right? And so what do you call that when the endometrium finds its way into the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity? That is endometriosis. So it's kind of like a cancer, but it's really not a metastasis. It's just a little funny route that those cells have taken and found a place to reside. Okay, so then you would expect that endometriosis to be what? Cyclic in nature as well, right? The most irritating parts of it. Okay. All right, so that's it for lecture. Unless somebody's got some more questions. Yeah. Ah, okay. Let's go over those hormones. In the female, five hormones in the female. FSH, LH, estrogen, and progesterone. Okay, and then the fifth one is human chorionic gonadotropin. So that's your fifth one. I'm sorry, I got lost in the conversation. Okay. In the male, there's FSH, LH, and testosterone. There's no progesterone. There's no analog to progesterone in the male because males don't go through gestation. There's no need for it. And since the male never gets pregnant, there's no need for human chorionic gonadotropin either. Right, so in the male, it's just LH, FSH, and testosterone. Female, LH, FSH, estrogen, progesterone, and HCG. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the final. Oh, I didn't pass the sign-in sheet around. Dang. I have it right here. So sign it really fast, pass it around. We got plenty of time. The final exam is a week from today, December 13th, right in this room at 10:30. All right, so 10:30 to 12:30, but it's just a regular test. So there is no class this Wednesday because finals start on Wednesday, so no lectures. You shouldn't. I think instructors can give a lecture if they want to during their regular time, but typically no one does because there might actually be a final scheduled in here on Wednesday, or at least part of the time. So no class Wednesday, so this is it for the class. Your final questions, but let's see. I will have office hours tomorrow, and then my office hours will change, and I'll put when they how they change in Blackboard. So if you want to see me sometime, probably I'll just keep it on Thursday. And maybe right before class on Monday, something like that. I'm going to grade them and have them probably up there by Wednesday. Okay? Did you take your practicum already? Yeah? Okay. Okay, so then your quizzes too. I'll grade your quizzes so you'll know by Wednesday exactly how your grade is in here.
What about online quizzes?
Online quizzes?
The ones that you're either going to drop it or have it in
your. Yeah, I'll have to start looking at all that. That's going to be really time consuming to look at everybody's quiz for every student. I'll probably email everybody as to, you know, what I'm doing with that. And I'll probably make a column someplace and you can see that one quiz score. And then I can't tell Blackboard how to calculate the grade if I drop it somehow. So then I'll have to put it into a spreadsheet like Excel, and then I'll put the Excel spreadsheet in Blackboard. Okay. And then you'd be able to see what grade is which. And I don't know if it will have a major effect on a grade. Maybe the grade in Blackboard will be exactly like the one Excel calculates. I'll be interested to see. Yeah.
Yeah. You have two more grids online.
There's one due tomorrow. You know, I don't know. There's two more. And then what, the day after your final, you have one due? Okay. Good. Two more. A lot of opportunity. You know, I'm going to stop calling exams and quizzes. Guess what we should call them? Opportunities. Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah. There's no difference between A and A plus or A minus. There's just A, B, C, D. Okay? But I do know exactly what your score is. So if you get an 89 and you ask me for a reference, you know, I tell people what your score is. They know that you missed an A by just a little bit as opposed to getting like an 80%. Okay, it shows up on your record as an A, B, C, D. It's really strange the way grades go. It starts out as a numerical score, then it's converted into a letter, and then it's converted back into a numerical average again, you know, like your grade point average. It's weird. That's just the way it is. Yeah, question. Yeah? Okay, oh, this sounds like a good question, but I can't quite hear it. So say it again, with FSH and LH.
How does that affect the male?
FSH and LH. Yeah, FSH causes spermatogenesis because the maturation of a sperm is like the development of a follicle. And so that helps the Sertoli cells, and it helps the germ cells inside the testes produce sperm. And remember, that happens throughout the whole life cycle of the male. LH in the male, right, goes to the interstitial cells of Leydig, and it causes those cells to secrete testosterone. So LH in the male causes the release of testosterone. FSH in the male causes spermatogenesis. So it's almost the same as the female, a little bit the same. Okay. But in the male, you know, male doesn't have proliferative phase or a follicular phase or luteal phase. They're just kind of, what, boring. Okay, I'm going to turn off my mic now. Don't forget the sign-in sheet.